Good morning again, and thank you so much. It's a joy to be with you today. And I'd like to explore the theme Inside Everything with you by sharing a few reflections and then reading some of my poems. And I'd like to begin with a poem of mine as an invocation and a meditation. It's called If You Want a True Friend. If you want a true friend, just open your hands and say, I don't know. Say it softly and wait so your other can see that you mean it. Give them a chance to drop what they think is secret. Let them come up with a cup of what matters from the spring they show no one. Let them sigh and admit that they don't know either. Then you can begin with nothing in the way. Go on, admit to the throb you carry in your heart, and let the journey begin. You know, it's been amazing and challenging to go through this whole almost year and a half of the pandemic that seems to be coming to a close. And it has highlighted for me, as a long-term cancer survivor, the challenge of difficulty and transformation that we all meet individually and collectively all the time. So I want to share a quote from a singer-songwriter, Mae Erlewine, a very precocious old soul I've met out here in Michigan, who's very young and amazing. And one of her songs, she has this line, "Make it whole again with our holy hands, as only we can." And I think we're being asked to make it whole once again. You know, it's a law of spiritual physics that things always come together and they always fall apart. And every generation is faced with making it whole again. And now it's our turn to reknit the kinships that hold life together. Because when all else fails, we are called to turn to the eternal resources that are inside everything. And all the traditions speak of this renewal in the face of suffering. They may call it different things and approach it from different positions, but all the traditions speak of this renewal. How do we try to accept and begin again in a way that is more giving and more loving? Well, the first way, again by many names, is by being true and authentic. And how do we do that? How do we stay true and authentic? Well, by holding and listening. These are two of the oldest medicines that we have as human beings, right from the beginning of time. I can say to you honestly, I have never held or been held when it hasn't been healing. And I have never listened or been listened to when it hasn't been healing. And that, you know, I may not want to hear all the time what I'm being asked to listen to, but that doesn't mean it hasn't been healing. And it's interesting, you know, the word authentic itself goes back to the Greek authentes, which means the mark of the hands, the mark of the hands. And I learned from a retired physician, pediatrician, that when a child is formed in the womb, literally the heart is the first thing that forms, and the next are the hands start to literally grow out of the heart, and they're known as arm buds. And so what we reach for in the world does come directly from inside and from our heart. This is why, when we're passionate, we talk with our hands. This is why, a sign of a heart attack is we feel it in our arms. So, to be authentic is to take what's in the heart and bring it into the world. And even our biology affirms this. So, our relentless care is what makes us whole again. And this has always been so. So I want to share one more reference point about all this. And this goes back to a philosopher, a Chinese philosopher by the name of Mencius, Mencius. He lived about 300 BC, and he wonderfully believed that it is in our nature to care. And he had a beautiful metaphor for this. He said, you know, as water will flow downhill and join other water, if left to its own nature, so too human kindness. You know, we can manipulate water, we can dam it and we can pipe it or channel it, even to go uphill. But if allowed its true nature, water will always flow downhill and join other water. And Mencius said, human beings, our souls, where that kindness starts, yes, allowed our true nature, we will always flow in kindness and join each other. We can be manipulated or manipulate ourselves out of fear and pain and worry to be other than kind, but allowed our true nature, we will always find each other and join in kindness. Now, in the Chinese culture, our impulse to care is known as Ren, R-E-N. And when pressed to describe this impulse to kindness, Mencius really couldn't put it into a sentence or two, but he came up with this image. He said, I don't know what to call it, but if you were to see a child about to fall into a well, the impulse in you to save that child, that is Ren, R-E-N. And in the Jewish tradition, there is a term, a phrase, an ethic, known as Tikkun Olam. And this means we are here to repair the world. But since we are the world, we must start by repairing ourselves. And this, for me, brings me to the poems that I share. So, you know, I want you to know that I, by retrieving the poems, retrieving more than authoring, this is how I repair myself. It's how I listen to the mystery and grow. I listen with my heart, and the poems come to be my teachers if I stay in conversation with them. And I share this because this is not just a creative process. This is a spiritual introspective one. I just happen to write it down. And so I encourage you to listen with your heart to life in your days and to stay in conversation with the teachers that show up. So this brings me to the poems I'd like to share. And I want to begin with this poem called Inside Everything. And it's short, and I'll read it twice. Inside Everything. Keep trying to hide, and in time you become a wall. Keep trying to love, and in time you become love. Our journey on earth is to stop hiding so we can become love. Everything else is a seduction and a distraction. Courage is staying true. Inside everything. Keep trying to hide, and in time you become a wall. Keep trying to love, and in time you become love. Our journey on earth is to stop hiding so we can become love. Everything else is a seduction and a distraction. Courage is staying true. So I invite you with these poems, let them sit where they will in your heart. You'll get what you need. And don't worry about what they might mean. Just feel them, receive them. This next poem is about listening to the story we are in rather than insisting on the story we want to tell. Otherwise, we stop growing. And this was written during the last year. This is called The Great Waters. In the beginning, I thought I was going somewhere. I thought we all were. But falling in while trying to cross, I finally understood the journey is to follow the river. All the rivers, especially the ones no one can see. The soul is a fish whose home is in those rivers. So I can take you across if you want, But the secret is to go everywhere by going nowhere. And I will be here when you fall in, which is not a failure, but an awakening. So we're so busy trying to cross the river that we seldom realize we're meant to flow in God's river. You know, medieval monks in Europe, when asked how they practiced their faith, said by falling down and getting up. And I love that. I love that. And I also believe that our heart is our strongest muscle. And I can affirm for you, despite the suffering I've experienced in my life, my heart has never let me down. It has, in fact, been my greatest teacher. And this next poem speaks to the wisdom of a broken, open heart, a wisdom I think we all need again right now. This poem is called The Lesson. When young, it was the first fall from love. It broke me open the way lightning splits a tree. Then years later, cancer broke me further. This time, it broke me wider the way a flood carves the banks of a narrow stream. Then having to leave a 20-year marriage, this broke me the way wind shatters glass. Then in Africa, it was the anonymous face of a schoolboy beginning his life. This broke me yet again, but this was like hot water melting soap. Each time I tried to close what had been opened, it was a reflex, natural enough, but the lesson was, of course, the other way, in never closing again. You know, the great Sufi teacher Hazrat Inayat Khan said, God breaks the heart again and again and again until it stays open. And of course, there's a paradox here, because certainly we open and close all the time. My heart is opening and closing. My lungs are open. My eyes are blinking as I'm talking to you. So what do we mean, never closing again? Well, you know, in this, the sun is our great teacher. The sun emanates light and warmth in all directions without preference. And the heart is our inner sun. So our job inside is to never close off that inner light and warmth. Yes, in the world I need to discern, is it safe to be vulnerable with you? Are you trustworthy? But this is opening and closing the blinds. This is not shutting off the inner light. And the next thing I want to share is a little story. And this is actually the story of a wonderful soul I met. His name is Eric, and he's a TV producer in Montreal. But he is also a Sufi, and we both were speaking at a conference, and we became instant friends. You know how that can happen in those wonderful moments, like we knew each other forever. And he gave me permission to share his story, and I want to share this. This is called Depth Seeks Us. We met in the mountains far from the sea, but in his eyes I saw the sea. Somehow we'd known each other for a long time. He was born and raised in Montreal, and his English, cupped in French, lapped like small waves in the air between us. On the third day, he said to me, I don't tell this very often, but I was not very happy as a young man. I worried about the world and if all that mattered would make it through. He looked younger than he was. He folded his napkin and continued and said, I was annoyed by everything, never sure if those who put things together could outlast those who break things apart, and honestly, it made me somewhat dark. He leaned back and went on. Everyone thought I was too critical, but we were all trained in the mind at an early age. Anyway, I was 21, half interested in everything, on a harbor ship full of tourists, annoyed at their eagerness. The clouds were thick and the sea was choppy, and suddenly a school of belugas circled the stern and everyone went running. I saw their soft whale heads round the surface and return, and I thought, how disappointing, this is all we get to see. He sighed and shook his head a bit and went on again. I wandered to the bow to get away from everyone and leaned over the rail. The ship bounced into the waves, spray on my face. It felt good to be left alone. And then, from under the bow, a mountain of a fish lifted the ship. It was a great blue whale peeling back the sea. And there, right before me, its gigantic eye staring into mine, an eye as wide as peace, as deep as all time. It stared through the bottom of my heart. I tell you, that moment, eye to eye, felt like a lifetime. And in that brief lifetime, everything was aglow. I can see it all now, the water streaming from its godlike eye, the God in that mass of eyes searching for the God in me. And before it swept back into the sea, it took all my doubt with it. Everything seemed softer and truer. By now, his eyes had widened in the telling, and we were drifting into each other even more. He took my hand and said, I was born in the eye of the whale. What an amazing story. You can't make these things up. And so, you know, every soul on earth will be given the chance to be dropped into the depth of life. Now, for Eric, it was very dramatic. A whale literally lifted up the boat that was carrying him. But it could be very, very normal and less dramatic in your life. You know, teachers are everywhere. In the Hindu tradition, there is a term, Upa Guru, which means the teacher that is next to you at this moment. And there is always a teacher next to you at this moment. Now, in this next poem, the teacher is a simple fly, as undramatic as Eric's whale was dramatic. This is called At the Window. I was at the window when a fly near the latch was on its back, spinning, legs furious, going nowhere. I thought to swat it, but something in its struggle was too much my own. It kept spinning and began to tire. Without moving closer, I exhaled steadily, my breath a sudden wind. And the fly found its legs, rubbed its face, and flew away. I continued to stare at the latch, hoping that someday the breath of something incomprehensible would right me and enable me to fly. There are teachers everywhere. It could be a fly, it could be a whale, it could be the light on a broken piece of glass in an alley. God shows up in thousands of ways. This next poem is called Thinking Like a Butterfly. Monday, I was told I was good. I felt relieved. Tuesday, I was ignored. I felt invisible. Wednesday, I was snapped at. I began to doubt myself. On Thursday, I was rejected, and now I was afraid. On Saturday, I was thanked for being me. My soul relaxed. On Sunday, I was left alone, till the part of me that can't be influenced grew tired of submitting and resisting. Monday, I was told I was good. By Tuesday, I got off the wheel. Now that place in us that can't be influenced, that's the place inside everything where God lives. And we are human, so all of the different reactions we have are normal. But we return to that place that can't submit or resist, that just is. Now, did I really get off the wheel on Tuesday? Of course not, because I'm human. So why did I end the poem there? Certainly not to have you think of me better than I am, but because I need to have something to aspire to. And the purpose of poetry, of all art, is to marry what is with what can be, so we can move forward. This next poem is a lesson to me from a teacher about grief. There's been so much loss in this last year and a half, and I want to share something about grief, that harsh and great teacher. You know, about before the pandemic, actually 4 or 5, maybe 6 years ago, both my wife Susan and I went through about a year or more where we had immense grief just come one after another. In that time, we lost Susan's mother. We lost both my parents. We lost our dear dog child, whose name was Mira. And I lost a mentor of mine, Joel, who lived to be 102. And one day, on a beautiful day like today, I was sitting on our deck in our backyard, and the grief all hit me at once. I just was thrown into this deep, deep pain, and yet the day was beautiful, and I couldn't choose between the two, and I was thrown into a place where my heart had to accept both, and it led to this lesson, and this poem is called Adrift. Everything is beautiful, and I am so sad. This is how the heart makes a duet of wonder and grief. The light spraying through the lace of the fern is as delicate as the fibers of memory forming their web around the knot in my throat. The breeze makes the birds move from branch to branch as this ache makes me look for those I've lost in the next room, the next song, in the laugh of the next stranger. In the very center, under it all, what we have that no one can take away, and all that we've lost face each other. It is there that I'm adrift, feeling punctured by a holiness that exists inside everything. I am so sad, and everything is beautiful. And this is a good example of what I mean by retrieving a poem, because I followed the inexplicable moment of that feeling. I was led to the insight at the end. I didn't know that when the poem started. This was the reward for being authentic. I arrived at this teaching that then helped me. I didn't know in the very center under it all what we have that no one can take away and what we've lost face each other. There is where I am adrift, feeling punctured by a holiness that exists inside everything. That was the reward for facing the grief. This next poem, a short poem, continues to be a great teacher for me, especially during difficult times. And it's short, and let me read this one twice as it bears it. This is called Mind as Keyhole. Beneath the cloud, everything is gray. Above the cloud, everything is light. Calling the cloud unfair is being a victim. Trying to conquer the cloud is being a hero. Calling the cloud a cloud is the beginning of peace. Mind as keyhole. Beneath the cloud, everything is gray. Above the cloud, everything is light. Calling the cloud unfair is being a victim. Trying to conquer the cloud is being a hero. Calling the cloud a cloud is the beginning of peace. So I have three more poems to share with you, and they give you an invitation to take a question with you. And sometimes when we can be authentic enough, we become conduits or vessels for the truth of others. It was Carl Jung who said that the poet and the artist, the poet is the lightning rod for the unconscious. And this is at the heart of all compassion, when living our truth opens us to the truth of others. And this next piece is a story of another that came through me. This is called the symmetry of kindness. The train slammed into the station, injuring hundreds. The engineer was critically hurt. People toppled over each other, bouncing across seats and against windows. There was blood and glass everywhere. One woman shimmied her way to the platform when part of the station ceiling fell, pinning her. She thought she would die. Then the hands of fellow passengers lifted her, one to another, and she was saved. Later, she wanted to say thank you, but didn't know who to thank. Once on the mend, she retrieved a list of those who were with her that day on that train. And now, one by one, she looks them up, asking if they had helped her. Each of them smiles and says no. Once with them, she can see what each of them needs, and so she helps them along. She unpacks groceries for an old woman, listens to a widower's story, and gives a single mom her umbrella. This has gone on for weeks. She keeps trying to find those who helped her, only to help those she finds. Finally, it occurs to her that this is God's symmetry of kindness. She will never know who helped her, so she can thank and help everyone she meets along the way. And I offer this next poem as an encouragement for the year ahead. It's called To Be and Belong. Let go your want for greatness and feel the tool that's in your hand. Let go your fear of emptiness and receive the wave still reaching from the beginning. It only wants to enliven you the way water refreshes every hole. So let the web of things entangle you. Only stars are free, and they are so lonely. Curse what you will, but give thanks that everything alive wants something from you. You know, when things break down or they don't go as planned, whether individually or globally, as has happened with this pandemic, there are always three archetypal questions that we are called to ask ourselves. And they are, what needs to be repaired? What needs to be reimagined? And what needs to be left dismantled now that it has broken down? And I think these questions are especially relevant today. So I offer this to you as a question to walk with, whether you journal about it, whether you meditate on it, whether you have conversation with a friend or trusted loved one about it, maybe all three. Can you ask yourself in this moment in your life, where we are right now in the life of this pandemic, what needs to be repaired in your life? What needs to be reimagined? And what needs to be left dismantled and not be put back together? Can you describe each very personally and what an initial step toward each effort might look like for you? It's been a joy to be with you today. I thank you so much for this kind of coming home. I spent many years in Albany. It has a dear spot in my heart. And I leave you with this poem of mine called Free Fall. If you have 1 hour of air and many hours to go, you must breathe slowly. If you have 1 arm's length and many things to care for, you must give freely. If you have 1 chance to know God and many doubts, you must set your heart on fire. We are blessed. Each day is a chance. We have 2 arms. Fear wastes air. I wish you many, many blessings as you go forth today. Thank you for having me in your community.